This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Change Agent by Daniel Suarez. Read for you by Jeff Gerner. Full fathom five thy father lies. Of his bones are coral made. Those are pearls that were his eyes. Nothing of him that doth fade, but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange. The Tempest, William Shakespeare. Chapter 1.
Before we begin, have you any questions about genetic editing, Mr. and Mrs. Cherian?
The counselor took a whopping bite from a vada pav sandwich as he clicked through their file. The young Mumbai couple exchanged uncertain looks. In their late 20s, well-groomed and dressed in crisp business casual clothes, they appeared a step above the cramped, dingy, and windowless office around them. Nonetheless, here they were. The wife appeared especially ill at ease. The husband shook his head.
No questions at the moment, no.
He looked to his wife reassuringly, patted her on the knee. She spoke up.
How does the procedure work?
The counselor answered with his mouth full.
Ah, an inquiring mind.
She narrowed her eyes at him. The husband cut in.
My wife and I are both attorneys. Given the legal status of this enterprise, we were understandably reluctant to research the topic on our own devices.
Well then,
the counselor finished chewing and wiped his fingers on a crumpled napkin.
I have something that should address your questions.
He noisily rooted around in his desk drawer and in a moment produced a device the size and shape of a paperback book, which he placed on the cluttered desktop between them. When he pressed down on the device, it unfolded into a pylon shape, sporting several lenses facing forward and back. It booted up, white light glowing within. The wife drew stylish mirror glasses from her purse and donned them to shield her eyes.
A glim? You think we'd allow you to access our retinas? This is out...
No retinal scanning, I assure you, Mrs. Cherian. Merely a brief in-eye presentation.
The husband looked to his wife.
They have our DNA, love. Retinas are the least of it. Nilo, I want our embryo transferred back to the clinic. My love, this place is a rat hole, a defunct export office by the look of it.
All part of the disguise, Mrs. Cherian. We must not attract undue attention from the authorities. But rest assured, our labs are well funded, run by the largest gene editing syndicate in the world, Trefoil. None are more sophisticated.
My love, remember, they came highly recommended.
She grabbed her bag as if to go.
Nilo, we are law-abiding people. We've discussed this, Cherub. Principled positions are admirable, but other parents are doing this. We as well must do everything we can to prepare our son for the world in which he will live.
He gestured to the glim on the table.
Why don't we watch the presentation and see how we feel afterward?
She sighed and reluctantly removed her mirror glasses. The counselor beamed.
Very good. Please, look forward. It will find your retinas in a jiffy.
In a moment, from their perspective, the air above the desk filled with a highly detailed 3D model of the double helix of DNA. It rotated there. An utterly convincing virtual object, seemingly as real as the desk. Yet the floating DNA existed only as a rich planoptic light field projected directly onto their retinas and unseen by anyone not targeted by the glim. Light field projectors like these had largely replaced physical televisions, computer screens, and mobile OLED displays in the last decade or so. Beaming imagery directly onto a viewer's retinas instead of spraying photons all over the place had many advantages, authentic augmented reality being one. environmental sustainability another, privacy another still. A female narrator's voice came to them via a focused acoustic beam.
Initially developed in 2012, CRISPR technology is a search and replace tool for modifying DNA, the blueprint of all living things.
The word CRISPR appeared with the letters expanding into full words in turn.
Shorthand for clustered, regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats. CRISPR derives from a naturally occurring process in bacterial immune systems, and it has been adapted by modern science to permit targeted genetic edits of plant, animal, and human embryos.
The 3D animation showed a labeled RNA molecule enter the scene.
The process begins by seeding a guide RNA with both a target and a payload genetic sequence.
Labels identified them in turn as they were inserted into the RNA molecule.
This guide RNA is then injected into an embryonic cell's nucleus,
the RNA clamped onto the double helix of DNA, unzipping it,
where it reads the embryo's DNA. Wherever a match for the target sequence is found,
the 3D image highlighted a match between the RNA target sequence and a segment of the cell's DNA.
A natural cutting protein acts as a molecular scalpel, severing the DNA chain.
The animation showed the double helix of DNA cut.
Removing the matching segment,
the animation showed it being removed,
and inserting a copy of the payload DNA in its place.
The RNA's payload sequence copied itself into the gap, and the DNA quickly rejoined.
In this way, human embryos may be safely and reliably edited in vitro to correct deadly, heritable genetic disorders.
Moving music swelled as the scene dissolved to a life-sized 3D projection of a beautiful but despondent little African girl with cloudy, blind eyes. She looked as real as if she sat in the room with them.
CRISPR developed cures for cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, sickle cell anemia, Huntington's disease, hemophilia, and more have already saved or improved the lives of hundreds of millions of people worldwide.
The scene dissolved into a new image, one of the now smiling girl with clear brown eyes reaching up to smudge flour onto her mother's nose. They both laughed and embraced as they made cookies together.
Ending a legacy of suffering, and for the first time, putting humanity in control of its own genetics.
The image tilted skyward to show a brightly lit horizon, a new dawn.
Theoretically, there is no limit to the desirable edits CRISPR can perform.
Dark clouds moved in, obscuring this glowing horizon. Ominous music rumbled.
However, international law currently prohibits edits beyond those designed to correct a short, UN-approved list of genetic disorders. Despite this, our expert researchers have perfected hundreds of highly beneficial CRISPR edits. Edits that increase both the quality and the quantity of human life.
The music rose as the image ascended, finally bursting through the gray cloud layer into an endless expanse of sunlight beyond. No horizon in sight.
And unlike other gene therapies, CRISPR edits are heritable, meaning they will be passed down to all future generations of your family line, what's known as germline engineering. This means your investment today will pay rich dividends for all your child's descendants.
The scene transitioned to a life-sized and utterly realistic projection of a healthy 5-year-old South Asian boy who rotated slowly before them.
For example, a minor edit to a human embryo's DAF2 gene could add 30 healthy years to a child's life. A change to BCAT1 could add even more.
The image of the boy aged to an adult, and then beyond until he had a full shock of gray hair, but an otherwise healthy frame. He lifted up a laughing grandchild with ease as they ran toward a zoo exhibit. The imagery then dissolved to show a young man, studious and attentive, in a classroom.
A change to gene DLG3 can improve memory, while a series of edits within the M1 and M3 gene clusters can substantially increase intelligence.
The image morphed to the teen wearing a valedictorian cap and gown. He smiled as he took the podium amid applause, ostensibly to address his graduating class. The imagery shifted to an athletic young woman running on a track against several close competitors.
A tweak to the MEF2 gene can bestow type 2 fast twitch muscle fibers.
The young woman outpaced the other sprinters, raising her arms as she burst through the finish tape to cheers.
Increasing physical prowess.
The imagery resolved again to a double helix of DNA, with segments snipped and replaced here, there, and elsewhere.
Other, even more exciting edits are being developed to meet the demands of our increasingly competitive world. Be sure to ask your genetic counselor for a full list of edits in your price range. No matter which you choose, you'll be giving your child a timeless gift, one that they will be able to pass down to their own children, the first truly priceless family heirloom.
The DNA looped as the image zoomed out to soft, inspiring music, transforming into a three-cornered, continuous shape. Text appeared above and below the logo as it pulsed with life. Trefoil Labs. Evolution by design. Moments later, the virtual logo blinked out of existence as the counselor pressed down on the glim to fold it. He scooped the glim back into his desk drawer.
I trust that answered your questions?
The husband and wife both looked somewhat dazed at the sudden disappearance of the alternate reality. The wife was first to recover.
Could such edits be done on an adult person?
The counselor laughed, putting his sandwich down and clasping his hands.
Now that would be valuable indeed, but alas, no, Mrs. Cherian. Editing the DNA of one cell out of 35 trillion would not accomplish much. That's why these changes need to be made while your child is but a zygote, a single fertilized cell.
She nodded to herself.
I see.
You and I will remain as we are, but your child has no such limitation.
He studied her expression, pausing with the experienced cadence of a true salesman.
Shall we discuss the desired edits for your future son?
The husband took his wife's hand.
Are you ready to proceed, my love?
She visibly struggled with powerful emotions. The counselor had seen it all before.
Mrs. Cherian, all creatures select genetic preferences when they choose a mate. But science now gives you and your husband the ability to adjust your child's genetics just a bit further, together.
The husband again placed his hand on her knee. She shook her head.
It seems against nature.
The counselor spoke softly.
This is the very same process nature follows to eliminate viral DNA in bacteria. The same process used under the UN's Treaty on Genetic Modification.
Yes, but to cure deadly genetic defects, not to tailor-make a child.
The husband shook his head.
We are not tailoring our child. We are correcting genetic weaknesses. Is not a weak memory fatal to a future doctor or attorney? Where does this sort of thinking lead us, Nilo? Eugenics?
The counselor shook his head slowly.
No, no, Mrs. Cherian. There are 3 billion letters in the human genome. Most people edit 6 to 12. Minor edits, indeed.
Remember, love, what did you say when you saw the Persaud's little boy? Is that not why we are here?
She fell silent. The husband turned to the counselor.
We don't want many edits, of course.
Nor would you need them, Mr. Cherian.
He started tapping at an unseen screen.
But even minor edits can go a long way to help your child in a rapidly evolving world. Some edits are more costly than others, of course, but who can put a price on parental love?
The husband studied his wife, who was literally wringing her hands, but he spoke to the counselor.
Which edits would you recommend?
I always suggest the DAF2 edit. Why not start your child out with up to 3 decades more of healthy living, so they can be there in your twilight years?
The counselor made some entries on the invisible screen.
How could such a thing be wrong?
The Cherians exchanged appraising looks.
Longer life, of course, suggests related edits. LRP5 for extra strong bones. PCSK9 for a greatly reduced risk of heart disease.
He clicked unseen UIs.
The next question is whether you prize intellectual excellence over physical prowess. Heightened intellect requires more complex edits and is thus more costly. You can choose both, of course, budget permitting.
He looked up at the parents. They stared, frozen by the magnitude of the decision.
Well, let us see what the Greek ideal, body and mind, would require.
The counselor displayed the price to them.
That's more than a year of university, Nilo. But with these edits, our boy could very well win a full scholarship. I am uncomfortable with this.
Why?
Because some government bureaucrat says it's not allowed? Do you really think the wealthiest families are not doing this, my love?
She sighed and looked away. He took her hand again.
We must do it, for our son's sake, no matter how uncomfortable it makes us.
Just then, they heard a boom that caused them all to jump in their seats. The wife turned.
What was that?
The counselor was already clicking away at invisible screens.
Oh my. Mr. and Mrs. Cherian, please, a moment.
The wife grabbed her husband's arm.
What was that, Nilo?
The husband stood as the counselor did. The sound of running feet and muffled shouts came from the hall.
Speak up, man.
The counselor motioned for calm.
It would appear that the Brihan Mumbai are raiding this facility.
The police?
Do not be alarmed. We have made contributions to the appropriate authorities. This is clearly a mix-up. In any event, we have numerous concealed exits for just such a contingency.
He gestured to his office doorway.
If you would please follow me.
The counselor moved quickly out his office door and into a narrow corridor, which was quickly crowding with other couples and their counselors. Some clients shielded their faces from one another with handbags and scarves. The husband clasped his wife's hand and followed closely.
This is outrageous. What about our embryo, Nilo?
The counselor glanced backward.
Not to worry, folks. As I said, we'll get this mix-up sorted.
Someone shouted in alarm behind them. The Cherians looked back to see the door at the far end of the hallway kicked in. Police in black body armor poured through, shouting,
Zameen par sab log!
Someone screamed, and the crowd of clients stampeded. A lab security guard emerged from a side door, pistol in hand. The police shouted it in unison,
Banduk! Banduk!
Red laser dots clustering on the guard's chest as he stood slack-jawed. Deafening pops filled the corridor, screaming as everyone scattered. The security guard dropped like a bag of cement. The husband pulled his wife down to the floor alongside him.
Down, love! Get down!
People ran past them in a panic toward an unseen rear exit, some trampling the husband and wife as he shielded her.
Watch it, damn you!
The police shouted again,
Zameen par sab log!
Their counselor was nowhere to be seen. The husband spoke into his wife's ear.
We must say nothing until we've seen Council Love. I need to phone Anish.
His wife was silent. The husband noticed blood on his hand. Panicked, he patted his sides down.
My love, I...
And then, finding nothing, he looked to his wife. A small bullet hole pierced her temple.
No.
He cupped her head. Blood pooled beneath them both, expanding quickly across the cheap, dirty carpet. He tried to form words, then finally screamed in horror as police approached behind him, guns raised.
No! No!
He hugged her body close, shrieking in anguish. The helmeted and armored police tried to pull him from her, but he would not let go.
My love! No, my love!
Chapter 2. Change comes. Inexorable. Most times it arrives gradually, but sometimes change is an earthquake. Cherished assumptions crack, rocks of stability crumble, chasms of experience open between adjacent generations. Thinking back on his childhood, Kenneth Durand remembered his millennial parents enduring their own technological earthquake, the disruption of every industry. Their college degrees useless and their student debt insurmountable, they fell, like many others, out of the middle class. His father's ready smile was replaced by a mask of worry that remained until the day he died. Automation and disintermediation rocked their world. And everyone thought that was big change. It was nothing, just a tremor. Two even larger shockwaves came for Durand's generation. The first was mass adoption of light fields. Suddenly, what you saw with your own eyes wasn't necessarily reality. Most of the consumer electronics industry disappeared. The second, and far more disruptive shockwave, was the fourth industrial revolution, synthetic biology. What was once manufactured was now increasingly grown by custom-designed organisms, algae, yeasts, bacteria. Automobile bodies grown from chitin, biofuels from custom E. coli bacteria, deathless meat and cultured dairy products from sustainable cellular agriculture. Biofacturing instead of manufacturing. Life itself harnessed to the human will. Societies that incorporated these advances moved on. Those that could not, did not. Instead, they languished in the debt, political paralysis, and recriminations of the previous age. Durand had made his own choice, and the memory of those he'd left behind still ached. No doubt migrants of prior eras had always suffered the same anguish. They saw a brighter future somewhere and someway else, and walked the difficult path that led them there. He'd disappointed so many people, violated beloved traditions of service and loyalty. But life was all about difficult choices. Durand contemplated headlights from 80 stories above as the first light of dawn crested the Johor Strait. Singapore's robot rush hour was already underway far below. Autonomous electric cars packed the expressways, their LED headlights coursing over the landscape like rivers of white-hot lava. He barely paid attention to the voice of a female newscaster in his ear.
Korea prepares to celebrate the anniversary of its reunification. Seoul officials are rolling out the red carpet for Chinese dignitaries, honoring Beijing's pivotal role in the nearly bloodless coup and invasion that deposed the Pyongyang regime.
From the traffic patterns below, it was clear humans were no longer behind the wheel. No stopping and starting, but traffic flowing smoothly, closely coordinated, optimized. Mathematics on parade, his father had called it. Each vehicle informed by its neighbors and by the whole. These days, you couldn't drive yourself to work even if you wanted to. Manual driving was prohibited on the expressways. Humans could not keep pace. That was something his father well knew. Mathematics on parade. An experienced and talented civil engineer, his father spent the last 10 years of his life getting downsized from entry-level retail jobs. He died of a heart attack while Durand was still in high school, leaving them in poverty. The anchorwoman's voice continued in his ear.
The Australian Coast Guard rescued passengers of a so-called zombie ship adrift off the Port Arthur coastline on Tuesday. Packed with hundreds of desperate migrants, the vessel had been abandoned without food or water after traffickers reportedly received payment to ferry the refugees to Indonesia, where they were told jobs awaited.
Durand turned away from the skyline and back to the high-rise jogging path. A glance at stats glowing in the corner of his vision showed he still had a chance to maintain a 7-minute mile. He resumed jogging as the news continued.
Fleeing climate change-related crop failures, civil war, and rising ocean levels, tens of millions of desperate migrants are on the move in what has become the largest sustained migration in human history.
Durand's LFP glasses tinted against the glare of dawn. The tropical humidity was already bearing down. He jogged through fogs of atomized water that cooled him at intervals. The track arced rightward on a 5-kilometer loop traversing the top of the Hanging Gardens residential complex. Lush jungle plants lined the inner edge. Durand pushed himself harder, curving along the path. Fashioned of spongy metamaterial, the surface reduced the impact on his joints. An infinity pool ran along the outer edge, and he jogged past a swimmer in goggles and a water cap. A lush garden path ran below and beyond that, near the outer railing. Everything in sight had been meticulously designed, what urban planners had taken to calling the built environment.
The International Olympic Committee gathers in Tokyo this week to debate the coming generation of genetically altered athletes. At issue is whether CRISPR edits should disqualify competitors for participation in Olympic and professional sport. At present, no reliable test exists to reveal embryonic genetic edits, potentially putting in peril long-standing records of human physical achievement.
As he ran, Durand focused on the ubiquitous construction cranes studding the Singapore skyline. 200-story buildings were going up all over the CBD, mute testimony that the boom was on. It was difficult to pinpoint the year Singapore became the technology capital of the world. Economists usually place that somewhere between ratification of the UN Treaty on Genetic Modification and the second wave of moon landings. But certainly, by the dawn of the gene revolution, the technological crown had shifted from America. Silicon Valley did not go quietly. Palo Alto, Mountain View, Cupertino, and San Francisco ran through all the Kubler-Ross stages of economic grief. Applied billions in defibrillating tax breaks to jumpstart investment, held embarrassing VR publicity stunts. In the end, the U.S. government was practically giving away H-1B visas. But nothing could stop the exodus. The valley was done. Synthetic biology finished it. Though, to be fair, that wasn't the valley's fault. Synthetic biology was the transistor of the 21st century. Yet political realities in America made it increasingly unfeasible for entrepreneurs there to tinker with the building blocks of life. Every cluster of human cells was viewed as a baby in America. A quarter of the population wasn't vaccinated. A majority of Americans didn't believe in evolution. Social media-powered opinions carried more influence than peer-reviewed scientific research. In this virulently anti-science atmosphere, synbio research was hounded offshore before it had really begun. Activists crowed over their victory. The rest of the world did not let the opportunity pass it by. By then, Silicon Valley's forte, circuitry and software, had become cheap global commodities created everywhere. Network-centric economic disruption was largely complete. Every nook and cranny of modern life had already been disintermediated. The gig economy and timeshare rentals had cannibalized the U.S. consumer base, low-bidding the middle class out of existence. It was what had done Duran's parents in. He still remembered them, huddled in one room of their home, while debt collection software rented out the rest of their house over the internet. The world moved on, hungering for answers to the pressing problems of a rapidly heating world. Looking for ways to feed the hundreds of millions of people rendered jobless by automation, skyrocketing global debt, climate shifts, and war. Synthetic biology delivered. Engineering yeasts, algae, and bacteria as the machinery of sustainable production. Growing and evolving integrated biofactory systems, serving as a foundry for new pharmaceuticals and CRISPR-edited climate change-resistant crops, like C4 photosynthesis rice, to feed Earth's 10 billion people. Built environments where cyanobacteria converted light into sugar and custom E. coli converted sugar into biofuel, organisms altered to feed into each other's processing loops. Bespoke E. coli that scrubbed the oceans of pollutants or sequestered carbon. Innovations in xenobiology allowed for the wholesale expansion of the biological alphabet itself. Xenonucleic acids, XNA, such as HNA, TNA, GNA, LNA, and PNA, sugars not utilized in the natural world that could create entirely new cellular machinery and compounds that did not interact with natural biological systems, launched entire industries in biological computing and bio-blockchain tech. Life itself had become the next system's architecture, and it was hard to argue with its accumulated uptime. And so, the Valley moved overseas, as did many of the people and firms in it, reconvening in a locale more receptive to science, if not quite liberal democracy. By the mid-2030s, most Synbio startups were Changi-bound. Within a decade, new trillion-dollar companies called Singapore home, replacing oil and finance as the main industries in the tiny island republic. And it had yet again transformed the city-state's skyline. Durand noticed a line of urban farming towers in the distance. 100 stories each and draped in vines, the dozen towers resembled overgrown post-apocalyptic ruins, except for their glittering organometallic lights. Acre for acre, the towers produced 10 times the food of a traditional farm on just a fraction of the water. Zero pesticides. Almost entirely automated. Nearby stood farm towers, whose crops had been genetically modified to produce pharmaceutical compounds. Beyond the towers, clouds of commercial drone traffic surged past on the aerial logistics highway, wrapping the northern and eastern shores, headed toward Changi and the aerial interchange that fed into the CBD. Silhouetted against the glowing eastern horizon, the delivery drones resembled flocks of birds. Duran's newsfeed went to commercial, an American man talking fast. The premier IGEA-certified provider for all custom cell cloning services, gene synthesis, subcloning, mutagenesis, bespoke pro-mutagens, variant libraries, and vector shuttling services. See DNA clones available in your preferred vector. No skipping or muting commercials. They'd be there waiting for you next time. Better to let them play. Besides, his lap was nearly finished. Durand ran between rows of bioluminescent trees on the rooftop approach to Tower 6. The soft glow from the trees had begun to dim as the first rays of sunlight touched their broad leaves. Engineered like everything else around him, the plants were as beautiful as they were functional, illuminating roads and sidewalks throughout Singapore. He sprinted the last 20 meters, pushing with everything he had. The building's security system recognized him, and glass doors silently opened as he knew they would. Duran slowed to a stop as he entered the blessed cool of the rooftop lobby. The tower's synthetic female voice spoke in Asian-accented English.
Good morning, Mr. Durand. I trust you had a pleasant exercise.
Durand ignored the voice. He knew it was just a narrow AI. Any input he granted it would be stored for later use or misuse, nothing more. It did not care about him any more than his soap dish did. Instead, he checked his running time while he caught his breath and stretched. The newsfeed resumed in his ear.
Attorney and internationally acclaimed human rights activist Kamala Cherian was slain Tuesday evening in a botched police raid on a black market CRISPR lab in the Kurla district of Mumbai.
Durand stopped cold.
Indian authorities claim Ms. Cherian, a client of the facility, was caught in the crossfire between police and lab security. Cherian's death will likely only increase public opposition to armed raids on illicit genetic editing labs under a mandate by the UN Treaty on Genetic Modification. Ratified in 2038, the agreement was intended to halt the global spread of unregulated genetic editing of human embryos.
Durand spoke to the newscaster.
Brittany, pause news.
The synthetic anchorwoman answered.
Pausing news.
He pondered the information for several moments.
Brittany, phone Michael Yiji Chang.
The synthetic anchorwoman, now his assistant, replied.
I'm ringing Detective Sergeant Michael Yiji Chang. One moment.
A pause.
I have Sergeant Yiji Chang on an encrypted line.
A man's voice answered. He had a slight Korean accent.
A call this early can't be good.
Tell me about the Mumbai raid.
What's to tell? Trigger-happy cop killed a VIP.
Does Claire know yet?
Yes, and I'll tell you what I told her. We shouldn't overreact.
The Brihan Mumbai were supposed to raid the lab, not the clinic. There wouldn't be civilians in the lab. Now an innocent woman is dead.
Not entirely innocent.
Come on, Mike.
If she had obeyed the law, Ms. Cherian would still be alive. Would you rather a cop died?
Of course not, but that's not the choice.
Look, we just provide the intel. National police conduct the raids. It's not on us.
Bullshit. We have leverage over the NCBs. We should only share lab locations with them.
If we expect full reciprocity, Interpol needs to provide national police with the ability to follow the money into these syndicates, to get the kingpins. That means your whole link analysis.
Durand felt a familiar fear.
Do you remember what we said after Djibouti?
This isn't misuse of intelligence, Ken.
Do you remember?
This was a mistake, and not even our mistake. The media is making these raids out as murdering hopeful parents. You and I both know what happens if the public turns against the Genetic Crime Division. 20 years from now, when kids have hands growing out of their foreheads, the public will want to know why the hell we didn't do something to shut these illegal labs down.
Agreed. So let's defuse opposition by making sure human rights activists don't turn up dead in the morning news.
A weary sigh came over the line.
Ken, I know you don't want to hear this, but innocent people are going to get caught in the crossfire. No black market on Earth right now is more profitable than baby labs, and the syndicates that run them are ruthless. They've killed journalists, police, politicians, civilians. Their bad press will far exceed ours. Mark my words, the public will stay the course with us, even if, like this morning, we have some bad news days.
Durand drummed his fingers on a nearby railing.
It's more than a bad news day to me.
Ken,
You didn't kill Ms. Cherian.
Durand stared at nothing. I wrote the algorithms that found that lab.
She is dead because a cop with bad aim killed Ms. Cherian. She was just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Durand paced in silence.
We save lives every day by shutting down these labs. You know it's true.
Durand remained silent.
Hang in there, buddy. Listen, I'll see you at the 8 o'clock, okay?
Right.
Hangxiao.
Durand closed the line. The building's AI asked,
Shall I summon an elevator, Mr. Durand?
Durand nodded, mopping sweat from his face with his Annapolis t-shirt. He resisted the innate human urge to thank the digital assistant and walked toward the elevator bank. Chapter 3. Durand padded down a corridor lined with culture-grown hardwoods and printed metals. The decor had an elegant Scandinavian simplicity. The door to his flat recognized him and clicked unlocked as he reached it. He pushed inside and gave a tight smile. Morning. His wife, Miyuki Uchida, sat at her desk with a cup of tea, engaged in an AR video conference with people invisible to Durand. Actual physical framed photos of family, friends, and colleagues, along with mementos from years of development work in Africa, lined the shelves behind her. Her long black hair shimmered in the morning light as she turned a smile toward him, then blinded the line,
Hey, you.
He kissed her on the cheek. You're up early.
My ACRA team ran into permit problems. Now they're talking in circles.
Can I make you something?
Durand went into the kitchen.
Thanks, I already ate. There's a mangosteen in there for you.
Durand filled a bottle of chilled water from the fridge door. In a few moments, his wife followed him into the kitchen.
Birthday girl up yet?
Durand grabbed a white tropical fruit from the fridge.
Pretending to sleep. Which reminds me, don't forget to come home with her gift tonight.
Why wasn't it delivered here?
She's scanning deliveries.
Ah.
Something's bothering you, I can tell.
Durand took a bite of the mangosteen. After a moment, he shrugged.
Just work stuff.
She regarded him. He squirmed under her gaze.
I haven't seen that look in 2 years.
Durand blinked.
My analysis got a civilian killed. Last night, a young woman. Human rights activist.
She put a hand on his shoulder.
Oh, Ken, I'm sorry.
She hesitated.
Although I'm guessing it's not as simple as that.
I can't get into the details.
I understand.
She hugged him.
I'm so sorry.
This is why I got out, Mi.
I know, but this isn't the same thing, Ken.
It's happening all over again.
It isn't the same.
She let go and looked at him.
No one's launching airstrikes based on your analysis.
He said nothing. She took his hand.
You know how guilty living in the bubble makes me feel. There's so much trouble in the world. We promised each other that we would only do this if what we're doing here makes the world a better place for her generation.
She pointed at the refrigerator. Durand turned to see a printed photo pinned to the fridge of their daughter's robotics team competing at a local maker fair. Smiling, young, hopeful faces.
I know you well enough to know that's what you're trying to do.
He stared at the photo and nodded reluctantly. Then he noticed one of his daughter's plesiosaur polygon models pinned up nearby. He tapped the teacher's gold star affixed to it and nodded to his wife appreciatively.
She's getting good.
Of course, she takes after me.
He laughed in spite of himself.
I'm gonna grab a shower.
While Durand ran an electric razor over his face, the family cat sat on the bathroom counter watching him. Genetically modified, the breed was known as a Toyger, because it perfectly resembled a miniature tiger. The cat's gaze unnerved him, as though a full-grown tiger watched from the far bank of some watering hole instead of the far side of the bathroom sink.
Nelson, do you mind?
The tiger answered with a rumbling meow. His daughter's pet. For some reason, it focused most of its attention on Durand. He wasn't thrilled with the idea of bespoke animals. However, neotenic pets, the cuter and more juvenile the better, were all the rage these days, and golden retrievers weren't an option in HDB flats. After shaving, Durand got dressed, knotted his tie, pulled on his suit jacket, and gathered his devices before heading down the hall. He knocked before poking his head into his daughter's room, Nelson still close on his heels. His daughter's room was decorated with solar system mobiles, deep field survey posters, and 3D printed robot dinosaurs she'd created. He gazed down on her sleeping form. She looked peaceful, a plush dinosaur toy pressed against her cheek. He whispered,
"You're such a faker."
Mia opened her eyes and giggled.
"You woke me up."
"Really?" He sat on the edge of her bed. "If you were asleep, then what's this?" He reached under her pillow and produced a glim. Already powered up, the small dome-shaped device instantly located his eyes and projected a video game screen onto his retinas. A virtual aquarium suddenly floated in midair before him, alive with alien swimming creatures and fictional plant life. "Remember the talk we had about the importance of sleep?" She whined,
"I did sleep."
"So if I check the log on this device, I'm not going to see you were up all night?"
"It's game work, and it's due today."
"Game work?"
"Yes, but I couldn't solve it."
Durand examined the screen and the completion percentage in the lower right corner, slowly decrementing. 72%, then 71%. "Well, if I can make some suggestions, your ecosystem is out of balance. That's why it's decaying." She propped herself up on her elbows. He pointed. "You need more diversity to close your life cycle."
"How do I do that?"
"Well, see how energy is draining with each generation? Who's cleaning the ocean floor and recirculating nutrients up the food chain?" She frowned at the image, which the glim was now projecting into both of their eyes. "You created big creatures, which is fun, but notice how they're dying off? Instead, make tiny, simple creatures, and they'll evolve from there. Balanced ecosystems grow from the bottom up over time, not from the top down all at once. We don't design complex systems. We evolve them. It's what nature does, and nature is the best teacher." She reached out to the virtual aquarium and started creating tiny organisms from building blocks on the ocean floor with practiced flicks of her hand, quickly getting engrossed in the simulation. The percentage jumped to 83, then to 84, then 85. "There you go." He swept her hair aside and kissed her on the forehead. "You're welcome." She spoke without looking up from the screen.
"Adele was wrong. I told her she was wrong."
"It's not Adele's job to do your thinking." He got up. Mia looked up at him.
"Daddy?"
"Yes?"
"Is it wrong to edit babies?"
Durand paused for a moment, but then sat back down on the edge of her bed. "What makes you ask that?"
"Because I was edited. Does that make me a bad person?"
Mia kept working on the simulation. Durand sat in shocked silence for several moments.
"Who says you were edited?"
"You did."
She turned to him.
"I heard you talking to Ji-chan when he and Obasan came to visit."
Durand closed his eyes in frustration at his own stupidity. "Well, first, you weren't meant to hear that."
"So it is wrong?"
"No. Well, babies don't get edited. Embryos get edited when they're just a single fertilized cell, and it's rare." She looked up at him.
"Adele's mom says embryos,
should never be edited. Editing isn't necessarily wrong, and it's nothing to be ashamed of.
But you and Sergeant Yi arrest people for editing embryos.
He leaned down to press his forehead against hers. No, hon. Daddy doesn't arrest anyone. All I do is help the police find people who break the law.
But editing is against the law.
Not all edits, just those that aren't safe.
Was mine safe?
Yes.
What kind of edit was it?
It was to cure a disorder, one that's hard to pronounce, but it's called Leber congenital amaurosis. It would have caused your eyes not to develop, so you'd be blind. The doctors made a tiny edit to your SPATA7 gene and fixed it so you could grow up and see the world.
So it cured me?
He nodded. That's right. There's nothing wrong with curing an illness. I'm sure Adele's mom takes medicine when she's sick. People correct bad eyesight and cure diseases, right? She nodded. Well, that's what your mom and I did because we love you very much.
Then why are people on the feed so upset?
They're not upset at you, honey.
What are they mad at?
He paused again. Like I said, it's complicated. That's why we wanted to wait until you were older to talk about this. Realizing she wasn't satisfied with this, he added, some people want to edit embryos even when they're not sick.
Why?
Because they want to make their kids taller or stronger or smarter than the other kids.
But some kids are stronger and taller and smarter.
Yes, but nature does that.
But nature also makes kids sick, like I was.
Durand paused. That's true. He laughed and thought harder. But we don't fully understand how all our genes work together. They took millions of years to evolve, and any changes we make are passed down to all future generations. So the results could change our whole species in ways we didn't intend. A thought occurred to him. Like in your game work. He gestured to the Glimcast image. Do you see how traits in your creatures are passed down to following generations? She nodded. Well, that's how genetics works in the real world. When you took a shortcut and designed your creatures the way you wanted, they didn't fit the environment, did they? She shook her head. And even though they looked cool, they soon got sick, and their offspring even sicker, and soon your whole ecosystem got sick. The same is true in the real world. If we make edits that don't fit the environment, even though we think they're cool, then bad things could happen to future generations that we didn't expect, and we don't want that. That's why we only let sick people correct genetic errors, changes that will make them the way humans evolved to be. Any other edits are against the law. And those are the edits your daddy, Sergeant Yi, and Inspector Bellinger try to stop, because we want to keep everyone safe. She looked up at him. He brushed her hair away from her eyes. Someday, I'm sure you'll know a lot more than I do about all this. She laughed.
I don't think so. You know a lot.
You'd be surprised. He glanced up at the time. Now, if I'm going to get to work on time, I've got to go. He kissed her on the forehead and confiscated the glim. Happy birthday, kiddo. And don't fall asleep at school. He went to the door. I'll see you tonight. She waved.
Bye, Daddy.
Bye-bye, sweetheart. Durand closed the door and turned to see his wife standing in the hall. She smiled as she approached him. Then she put her arms around his neck.
The birds and bees are so 20th century.
The birds and bees I can't explain. Or at least I think I can. What do the birds do again? She kissed him.
You did great. It almost makes me forget how badly you screwed up.
He winced. I know. She must have been eavesdropping with one of her drones. You know how she gets when there's company.
Thankfully, it worked out.
Miyuki held out her hand. Durand placed the glim into her outstretched palm.
See you tonight.
She kissed him.
Don't forget her gift. I won't.
I won't.
Chapter 4 Interpol's Global Complex for Innovation, or GCI, resembled a fortified modern art museum. Originally built in the teens of the 21st century, it had been expanded and hardened against attack over the years. It now covered several acres of prime real estate in Singapore's diplomatic quarter across Napier Road from the U.S. Embassy. As he approached the entrance, Kenneth Durand nodded to armed guards watching from beyond transparent aluminum blast shields marked with Interpol's Sword and Globe logo. The entrance split into a dozen sealed chutes, only one of which opened to admit Durand. The chute doors operated on a randomized algorithm, with each visitor following a separate illuminated path. The entire entry system was designed to identify and categorize people into risk tranches, moving them through without stopping and quickly isolating suspected threats. This way, no one queued up, which itself would have presented a target to terrorists. And the GCI was definitely a target. Organized into financial, cyber, genetic, and counterterrorism divisions, Interpol's GCI employed advanced technologies in the fight against transnational crime. Though, contrary to popular perception, Interpol agents themselves had no police powers, at least outside their home countries. Likewise, Interpol itself had only two facilities worldwide, this GCI complex and a headquarters in Lyon, France. Instead, 190 national police organizations around the world maintained their own Interpol National Central Bureaus, assigning officers to liaise with Interpol's network, receiving and issuing a kaleidoscope of colored notices: red, orange, yellow, blue, green, purple, black, advising other nations on the activities of global criminals and the increasingly borderless world of crime. Whether other nations followed up on those notices depended on local politics and priorities. But if national police organizations wanted cooperation from other national police around the world, ignoring Interpol notices wasn't the way to get it. This quid pro quo arrangement had worked with varying levels of success over the decades. Member nations occasionally assigned or seconded investigators directly to Interpol headquarters, usually to learn or teach about new types of crime. And when it came to catching the next generation of high-tech criminals, Interpol was prepared to recruit from more than just the ranks of police. Kenneth Durand was fortunate to be one of those recruits, and it couldn't have come at a more propitious time for him personally. He cleared two more security checkpoints before arriving on the third floor and passing through another transparent aluminum blast wall emblazoned with the seal of the Genetic Crime Division, Interpol's standard logo, with the addition of a twining double helix of DNA around the sword, itself an alarming mutation to Asclepius's staff. Durand entered the busy offices, nodding at a passing lab technician. The floor plan was sleek, modern, but crowded with makeshift workstations. Proprietary DNA theft, custom viruses, and baby labs were fast becoming the world's most profitable criminal enterprises. That meant the Genetic Crime Division was growing fast, too. Durand entered the small, windowless office he shared with Detective Sergeant Michael Yiji Cheng.
Morning, Mike.
Hey.
Yi stared at an AR screen, or screens, only he could see. Yi was an athletic, handsome man. He'd been seconded to Interpol from the Korean National Police Agency in Seoul, which had been in turmoil ever since the reunification. He was here to share his expertise in embryo clinic cartels, and it was Yi who'd referred Durand to Interpol.
Something up?
Durand removed his suit jacket.
Oh, sorry, no. Just reading a note from my new cousin.
New? They found another one?
Yeah, Ministry of Health ran his DNA. Confirmed he's related.
Congratulations. You're getting quite an extended family.
Wants to come live with me.
Shit.
Blew through his reuni check. No marketable job skills. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Yi dismissed the virtual screen that was distracting him.
You look better than you sounded on the phone.
Durand hung his suit jacket behind the door. Haven't changed my mind, though.
Let's schedule an argument. Right now, we've got our 8 o'clock.
Yi got up and grabbed his own suit jacket from the back of his chair, then headed out through the cubicles.
Oh, right.
Durand grabbed his coat again and caught up.
The calendar just said external briefing. What's this about? The Mumbai raid?
Yi shook his head.
263 embryo mills shut down on 3 continents last month, and you think top brass is upset about Mumbai?
I'm telling you, it matters. Durand's division lead, Detective Inspector Claire Bellinger, stood at the head of the briefing room. She was a slim, elegant woman in her early 50s with a sweep of gray hair and piercing blue eyes. She wore a tailored pantsuit and no jewelry save for a platinum wedding band. Durand knew it had been placed there by her late husband before the bioweapon attack in Paris, an attack that not only killed Bellinger's